When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinking Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinking Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Josh Flagg, Chief Technology Officer at the Louisiana Economic Development Office. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, Neil? Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Hopefully the new job's working well. Obviously, this most recent announcement, if that's emblematic of what's to come, that's great news.
Oh, man, it's been exciting. Took over the new position as Chief Innovation Officer on July 1. It's a new position for the agency as well. And we couldn't have hoped for a better outcome for the end of the year than this big Meta announcement. It's been great.
How long has this been in the works before we jump into what it actually is?
Yeah, so this is actually one of these really fast projects, especially for the size of project it is. Usually these massive multi-billion dollar investments take a few years. This one is less than 1 year from when they first reached out to the announcement on December 4th. So they reached out to the state in late January, early February.
That's awesome, because I had not heard anything of it, and then all of a sudden it's on everybody's radar, and then all of a sudden an announcement. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, tell them what this is about.
Absolutely. So on December 4th, we announced a project with Meta. Meta is the parent company of Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp. It's the largest social media company on the entire planet. They've got 3 billion customers. There's only 7.5 billion people on the planet. So they've got about half of the entire addressable market, right? So it's massive. They announced that they will be building the largest artificial intelligence data center in their company's network of data centers in the entire globe in Richland Parish, Louisiana. So it's a massive investment of $10 billion.
Okay, let me stop you right there. I would venture to say that 80% of the listening audience have, and I wouldn't know this, but for the fact of being in the Sheriff's Association, where the hell is Richland Parish?
All right. So it's one parish to the east. So it's adjacent to Ouachita, which is Monroe. So it's the greater Monroe area, northeast Louisiana. It's in the Delta region, but you're just one parish to the east of Ouachita, which is where Monroe sits, right along I-20. So right there, you know, you're maybe one parish away from the Louisiana-Mississippi border right there in the Delta region, northeast.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay. Ravel's probably the biggest town. And look, to be honest, I don't know that I have all of my Richland Parish data 100% nailed on this, Newell, but Ravel's the biggest town. You got Delhi on the other side of the parish. And right in the middle is a little tiny, tiny town called Holly Ridge, right off I-20, and that's where this project will be going.
Absolutely. So what does it do? I think a lot of folks are kind of curious about what is this about. I mean, it's a $10 billion project, so we know it's big, but what's it about?
Yep, so this will be a massive facility. In fact, the dimension, the longest dimension for the longest point of the building to the furthest point of the other side of the building is over a mile long. So it's huge. Meta now owns about 2,300 acres right there along I-20 in Richland Parish. And the goal is to construct a massive facility that will have hundreds of thousands of GPUs, and these are processors, these are microchips that process information specifically designed for artificial intelligence. And so the goal will be, this will be the powerhouse, this will be the computing headquarters for all of Meta's AI computing for the globe, which is the amazing part. So you might ask your Instagram or Facebook application a question in Bangalore, India, or in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That's going to get computed in Richland Parish, Louisiana.
What drew them, one, to Louisiana, and two, to Richland?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the quick history is, about 20 years ago, the state took a gamble and bought a 1,400-acre site in Richland Parish, and did what they call site preparation, site certification, to get this big chunk of land ready to land an automobile manufacturer. And it just didn't work. And there was a handful of suitors over the years that took a look at the property and said, you know, the property's good, but we're nervous about workforce, we're nervous about the ability to scale our suppliers in this region, and a couple other issues that they had. And so it was not successful in landing an automobile manufacturer. And so it kind of sat dormant for all that time until Meta found this site on our website. It's sort of all of our certified sites in the state of Louisiana. And it checked every box for them. You know, first you got to have flat, dry land. That doesn't move, right? So obviously you don't want to be in an earthquake zone or anything like that. But most importantly, these guys are massive power users. Specifically these AI data centers are just massive power users. In this property, along with the utility that serves it, which is Entergy in this scenario, was able to deliver on the power that Meta needed to power this facility. So it kind of checked all the boxes, all the way down to the utility being able to deliver what they needed to run it.
And not only are they investing dollars in the facility itself, but they're investing dollars into infrastructure and other things in and around and throughout the state of Louisiana, right?
That's right. So they'll see a couple hundred million dollars in infrastructure improvements around the site, so, you know, roads and sewage and drainage upgrades for Richland Parish. They've made some significant investments into Entergy to build some natural gas power plants just for this facility, and then another one that will be attached to the grid. So Entergy will get some significant infrastructure upgrades thanks to this project as well. That'll service the entire state, in addition to this project. So ton of infrastructure upgrades. And then when it comes online in a couple of years, it'll be around 500 jobs that are high-paying jobs that are, 150% of the local household income level for Richland Parish.
Wow. So when obviously, I guess, the start date on this project is in the very near future, and how long do we anticipate this before it's up and running?
Yeah, it's a good question. These guys are moving dirt already. They have been super fast on all fronts. So they're already up there doing, land preparation work. And so technically, they're in kind of pre-construction phase right now. But it's got a 2 or 3 year timeline, depending on how many phases they end up building this out, and then how quickly the power infrastructure can kind of continue to get built out alongside it as well. So it'll be a boost in terms of just the construction phase for the next almost 3 years in the Monroe area. You'll see thousands and thousands of kind of skilled trades flocking to this region to help build this facility out.
At its peak, they're projecting 5,000 construction workers on that site. It's huge.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? It's wild. And so I think, in fact, I'm up here in Monroe today, Newell, and was talking to some small construction companies, and they're already seeing a boost. I mean, Meta's concerned about housing. Where are we going to put all these people? Where are they going to put the Meta employees? Where are they going to put some of the construction workers? So, you got people planning to build new hotels. You got people planning to build new apartment complexes and housing. And it's truly, truly transformational for not only Richland Parish, but really the greater Monroe area in general.
That's actually been an area of the state, not just Richland itself, that I guess to say underutilized would be a good way of describing it.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're 100% right. You know, it's largely rural. It's largely agricultural. And because the population density is not quite here, you know, some of these mega projects shy away from it because typically these mega projects just need thousands and thousands of people, and they get nervous when they look in rural areas. But Meta found this site. It checked every single box. I think working with the state, working with Entergy, they were confident that the construction project could be pulled off here, and then they could maintain an employment base of 500 people in this region. So it's transformational for this, for this part of the state. And honestly, it's been super validating for Louisiana in that we can work with the largest technology companies in the world on a significant level, right? With significant investment, that means that, Louisiana can rise to that challenge is a really big deal and sends a really big signal to other big tech players as well.
And obviously, Meta, this becomes a big footprint for them in this AI game, right? Because there are competitors to them as well, right?
It's huge. Yeah, it's wild. So the amount of investment that's flocking into artificial intelligence right now is the speed of which it's being deployed is unprecedented, even for big tech. Depending on whose numbers you believe, if you go with Goldman Sachs, they say that by the end of 25, so, just about a year away, we'll see another $200 billion of investment into AI infrastructure, just building these sort of things around the globe to power all of the growth in AI. But they definitely have headwinds. Look, OpenAI, which makes ChatGPT, is a major competitor. Google is a major competitor. Amazon has models. There's a half dozen really well-funded startups that have gotten, backing from other big tech companies. So there's going to be a ton of growth in this area, and they're competitive now. They're also validated, which I think is equally as important as being competitive.
Josh, what's the likelihood of, in the oil industry, we have the oil service industry. Is there such an animal to the AI world?
Yeah. So here's a fascinating angle to this. This is a big project. And it is transformational for Richland Parish and for Northeast Louisiana. But the reality is, once the construction is over, once the lights are on, and once the computers are humming along, this will be capped out at around 500 jobs. And that's not enough, right? It's not enough to change Louisiana's trajectory and our fortunes as a state. But if you take a broader view of artificial intelligence in general, you say, what can we do at the application layer of artificial intelligence, right? So how can we solve Louisiana problems utilizing artificial intelligence that then we can export back out to the rest of the world, whether it's, whether it's energy services or innovation in energy, whether it's solving healthcare challenges with AI or, water mitigation or coastal, preservation, looking at some of the things that we can actually do from kind of a living lab perspective and challenges that we can attack with AI here, I think is much more interesting in terms of a holistic strategy around AI in Louisiana than just putting all our chips into luring and building data centers. The data center stuff's important. It's core infrastructure, but we need to be doing really interesting things and solving problems with AI from the application perspective.
Yeah. By the completion date of this project, do we know how many will actually exist in the country today of similar size and nature?
Yeah, that's a hard, hard question to answer. And mostly because it's changing so quickly. If you just look at kind of round numbers today, and I'm talking about the big tech guys like Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft is at the top of the heap in terms of owning the most data centers, like actual data centers that they built and that they operate. They've got around 300 global, and that's their global footprint. Amazon got somewhere in the 250 count globally. But you get down to Meta, and Meta only has 35 or 40 data centers globally right now. So so if they want to catch up when it comes to kind of the infrastructure like Microsoft has and like Amazon has on the AI data center side, they've got hundreds to go potentially. So Amazon is also spending furiously in this race. You know, Microsoft is in very tight partnership with OpenAI, so they're spending a lot of money on additional infrastructure. So, you know, in a few years, we could be looking at, you know, not dozens, but hundreds of new AI data centers. I can't imagine they'll all be $10 billion investments. You know, we've seen a few other Meta investments just this year where the data centers were much smaller. They were $800 million. You know, they were $1.5 billion. This one is substantial just because it is so large at $10 billion.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, I don't know about you. Obviously, you're working in this sphere every day, but I think for the general public, getting their head around, you know, what is the limiting factor to AI and where does it end? You know, and it's like this complete and total unknown that's out there. You feel like you're in the midst of a science fiction movie, so to speak. You know,
it's like magic. And I think anyone, even on the developer side, even the people that are creating these tools, you know, at the most foundational level, they don't know either. I think it's growing and changing so quickly. Honestly, I think the most limiting factor today is power availability and the speed at which they can build the infrastructure out. So I think because those are real world challenges. No matter how good the software is, it still needs hardware to run. It still needs power, and these are very power hungry computational, you know, programs. And so I think, you know, if my crystal ball says that the states that will win in terms of the infrastructure investment will be states that can power really big, you know, users like this Meta project in Richland. But when you look at the application layer,
there is a huge benefit though to our energy infrastructure as a result of this, right? Because you have a finite, a defined location of a certain size, of a certain amount of consumption that requires a huge investment in grid development in order to support same. Well, that investment in that grid development actually has peripheral benefits to everyone in the surrounding area, right?
That's right. Oh, 100%. And we've already seen this happen. I mean, we've seen an exponential growth in inquiries for similar projects. Not all of these projects are $10 billion projects, but in many cases, they're multi-billion dollar projects that are looking at this Meta announcement and saying, oh, wow, you can do that in Louisiana. You can pull that off. And their electric utilities can deliver at this scale. But we have, you know, the crazy thing is, Newell, we have practice doing this. I mean, if you look at our industrial corridor in South Louisiana, some of those users use a gig of power. You know, these are, and that's equivalent to powering nearly a million homes. And so we've been in the big leagues for a very long time in terms of our ability to deliver a lot of power to one location. We've become a very attractive location in this world as well.
No, absolutely. Final thoughts, Josh?
This is the beginning. I think what we're going to do in 2025 in terms of attracting potentially more of these type of infrastructure investments and in building really interesting things at that application layer of AI is only going to heat up, and it's going to do so quickly. So I'm looking forward to all things AI in 2025.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and filling us in on this really exciting project up there in Richland Parish. The company Meta, they're the owners of Facebook and Instagram, and what's the other one? I forgot already.
WhatsApp.
Yeah, I should know. WhatsApp, sure. Thank you so much. Josh Flagg, Chief Technology Officer at Louisiana Economic Development. Congratulations. Exciting news. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Newell. Appreciate it.
Have a great week and happy holidays to you. We'll be right back, folks. Give us a shout, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, we'll visit with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll talk about Sunday's Saints Commanders game. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I don't know, Jeff. It seems like we're getting so close all the time, and we just can't close out the deal.
Yeah, you know, I can't bring myself to be upset about that game, right? Like, I just can't. Right. You know, I know that there's going to be some criticism of the decision to go for two. I thought it was objectively the right call. I actually agreed with it more than I did in the Rams game if they had gotten to that point, because to me, the big difference in this game is it was a play to end the game. Whereas in the Rams game, even if you got it, you would have given the Rams, I don't know, something like a minute. They had timeouts to potentially go and win the game. And that's the one thing I don't like about that strategy is, okay, you take the lead, but if the idea is, hey, your defense isn't stopping anybody, you're still asking the defense to stop them one time. And we saw that go against them in the Falcons game earlier this year. In this case, the execution on the two-minute drive was so good from a time perspective, from a clock perspective, that it was literally, hey, you got one play from the two-yard line. You make it, you win. You don't make it, you lose. You're not going to get a better chance. You know, two-point conversions are about 50-50. It's a coin flip. You're not going to get a better chance going to overtime than you are in that one moment, because the Commanders would have had no chance to even answer. So I can't bring myself to be upset about that.
I agree with you 1,000%. I could have never articulated it the way you did, but I agree with you 1,000%. That was the call, no doubt about it.
And you know, obviously it's tough because you put a rookie in that situation. But you know, would you have trusted a rookie more in overtime? I wouldn't. So that is what it is. You know, it's. When you look at games at this point in the season, and obviously they weren't eliminated from the playoffs at that point. I think technically they're still not eliminated, but you might as well. We can probably stop talking about it, you know, unless you want to do the crazy math, whatever. I think it's less than 1% chance now. But, you know, at this point in the season, you have to kind of take the positives for what they are. You know, I'm never going to root for a team to lose. I've always, even when I watch the team that I'm rooting for and they're eliminated from the playoffs, I'm still watching the game hoping the team wins. But you kind of become bulletproof at a certain point, because even you don't get it, and then you kind of look at the back end and you're like, okay, well, that was probably for the best, because winning games is not helping you from a draft perspective at this point. And you want to be able to pull positives. And what you were able to get from Spencer Rattler in the second half of that game, he took over looking at a 17-0 deficit on the scoreboard. The Saints, they got, you know, the time of possession killed them. They only got four possessions in the second half of that game. They scored on all four possessions. You know, I know people are going to come out of that game really down on Jay Kaner. I think when you watch a young guy get into the game, and this is his first career start, like obviously he's in year two, but it's his first career start, and getting off to a good start in those opportunities is so important, right? And that's what you saw with Spencer. In the first half with Jake, you roll out, he makes a nice pass to Cedric Wilson down the field. You know, you're kind of in business. Instead, it's a holding penalty. It comes back. You get a sack. Suddenly it's a three and out. And everything feels negative. You know, you look at how Spencer's second half started, you're staring at a 3rd and 10 that probably should have been a 2nd and 20. And I think Dan Quinn probably overthought it in that situation. I'm looking at a rookie quarterback backed up in his own territory early in the third quarter. I'm making him convert on the 2nd and 20. Instead, they declined a holding penalty, gave the Saints a 3rd and 10, kind of dared them to execute on 3rd and 10. Spencer finds Dante Pettis for a first down. Suddenly you're in business. That drive then ends with the Cedric Wilson trick play to Alvin Kamara that they've been sitting on for weeks. You know, Cedric Wilson, he was an all-pro or all-state quarterback in high school. He can throw the ball, as you saw. You know, he's always thrown it in pregame warmups, and he's got a cannon, and you saw it on that throw. So, you know, that's a big difference. And, you know, Jake's start kind of went the way Spencer's starts went when he got in there. And in this game, it was kind of reversed. And, you know, I just think there's a lot more reason to be excited about Spencer. I think the one of the reasons you didn't start him in that game is because the last thing I want to do with Spencer Rattler is give him another chance to start and bench him at halftime. And I think going into that game as a coaching staff, you knew that this is kind of the season for you, and you have to pull out all the stops. And so if it's not going well, you got to change course. And they were very ready to do that. And I just think you didn't want to do that in reverse, where you if you bench a guy twice in the span of like 8 weeks, how do you come back from that? You know, so yeah. I don't know. I feel good about what the Saints were able to do. You know, obviously they're 3-2 under Darren Rizzi. The two games they've lost have come down to the final possession. You know, these are exciting games. They're games you were in, games you're competing in against playoff caliber teams. You obviously like to get over the top. But again, at this point of the season, you're looking for positives. And I thought the positives definitely outweighed the negatives in that game.
No doubt. And the time of possession that you referred to, Washington had the ball 40 minutes and 50 seconds, New Orleans 19 minutes and 10 seconds. That's hard to overcome, especially with the third down efficiency rate of Washington at 52%. That's tough.
No, and I mean, you got Jaden Daniels to the ground 8 times behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
now,
8 sacks.
Only 5 of those were the defensive line, right? Like, so 2 of them were Willie Gay tackled him on kind of a scramble, like just shy of the line of scrimmage. So that goes in as a sack. DeMario Davis had another one that was very similar. Ugo Amadi also got through for what was a real sack. But, like, so realistically, it was 6 sacks that you'd count as an actual sack in terms of you affecting a pass. But, no, I thought the Saints defense did about as well as you could. And that's telling of just how good Jaden Daniels is, even as a rookie in the NFL, because containing Jaden Daniels looks like 11 carries for 66 yards. He's the leading rusher in the game, 25 of 31 for 226 yards and 2 touchdowns. 66 yards on the ground, 80% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, a quarterback rating of 118.5. And I feel like the Saints played him well. That's how good Jaden Daniels is at this point in his career. And that's scary for the NFC East, I have to imagine. But I thought this was one of the first times I've seen the Saints defense actually play a mobile quarterback well. And it feels kind of like a proof of concept game for them a little bit. You know, you held the Commanders off the scoreboard or out of the end zone in the second half. They benefited from a couple, you know, missed opportunities to Terry McLaurin down the field. They were living dangerously there in the third quarter. But no, I mean, the Saints touched the ball on offense one time in the third quarter. You know, they executed, they scored a touchdown. They never got the ball back until the fourth quarter. So, you know, the Commanders played that game well. But in the end, the Saints still had a chance. So that's kind of the razor thin margin of the NFL. Like, when you get a chance to come down to one play and win or lose, you take it. Because as you can see, like, the Commanders kind of dominated that game and they were on a razor's edge of losing it.
Yeah, no doubt. And that was, it was kind of a weird game. I got the sense, I don't know, that if we didn't have bad luck, we'd have no luck at all right now. Cause I think we have two injuries again, this game, you know, with, Alvin and, oh, my mind just went blank. We had somebody else that went. Yes.
So MVS got hurt at one point, but he came back.
Yeah.
Kool-Aid went down with a stinger on that possession. It sounds like if the game had gone on, so if you had kicked the extra point and gone to overtime, it sounds like Kool-Aid would have been able to go back in the game. So that's positive for his, you know, availability this week. They do have an extra day, so that'll help some of these guys get kind of where they need to be to go up to Green Bay and play in the Ice Bowl. Alvin's injury is the concerning one. And like, yeah, I was talking to someone at the facility last week and they're like, man, he's going to have 1,000 yards rushing for the first time in his career. And I was like, hold on, let's not say it yet. Cause, you know, one injury and suddenly here we are again, cause he's sitting there with what, 940 something yards or 60 something yards. And we'll have to see, because when you're talking about Alvin Kamara, a guy who you've signed to an extension and the season's over, exactly how much motivation are you going to have to be like, hey, you know, you might not be 100% right now, but we're going to throw you out there anyway just to get to 1,000 yards. No, you're going to be thinking next year for Alvin because you're going to need him next year. And you're going to be thinking this year for Kendre Miller because I want to showcase him and give him a full workload and see what he's got. So we'll see how the injury kind of looks for Alvin. It's a groin issue. It didn't seem major. It sounds like it happened on the crazy touchdown catch from Cedric Wilson. He tried to stay in the game, didn't work, came out on the next possession, and never returned to the game. But no, I mean, the injury luck is tough. So are the turnovers. You know, one reason the Saints are losing these games is they're not able to force turnovers, and they've had opportunities. I'll have to go back and look at some point, but it feels like just watching the games, that there's been so many forced fumbles that just bounce right back into the opponent's hands. I could think of two on Kirk Cousins alone that Peyton Turner forced a strip sack, and the Falcons were able to dive on it. You know, in this game, the opening drive, which was really a bizarre drive for the Commanders, you forced a fumble near the goal line. If you take control of that ball, you keep points off the board. That's a massive swing in that game, and you were unable to jump on it. And those are, you know, when you're talking about close games, not being able to take advantage of those things, it's the reason you lose. You know, if you force one turnover in that game, I think you have a chance to win it. If you score in the red zone, in either of those drives, or I think you only had one drive into the red zone, but you had settled for field goals twice. If you finish those off with touchdowns, you give yourself a chance. But that's, you know, when you look back at the stats, you can always find, you know, 4 or 7 points that would have swung everything.
And I'm always encouraged by, and not that they would do this, because I'm not one of those believers, but you've heard the naysayers about, you know, the team laying down. I got no sense of that. I mean, they're throwing their bodies all over the place. You know, they're risking injury. I mean, they're going, you know, leading with these tackles. I mean, it's, you know, you got people getting stingers and getting this, and they're in and they're out and they're back in and they don't want to give up. I have nothing but positives to say, and I attribute that first to the individual player, but the coach in bringing it, you know, together as a team. I don't get the sense that they're laying down at all or taking a hike.
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as a moral victory in the NFL. Either you win or you lose, right? But when Darren Rizzi comes out and says, "Hey, I'm proud of the way these guys fought," you know, it's kind of coach speak. But at the end of the day, I think in this game in particular, knowing what you went in there with, knowing you're talking about a backup quarterback, you changed quarterbacks at halftime. You're in a matchup against a team that you do not, you know, you're Marshawn Lattimore is coming back to town. Like, your star cornerback is playing for another team, you know, and there's going to be some emotion on that end. And you're able to, you know, you were 7-point underdogs at home. Like, if that's not bulletin board material, I don't know what it is. So you should go out there and fight. You should go out there and prove that you're getting underestimated. But I think that when we look back at this Darren Rizzi coaching tenure, that's going to be something that stands out, is he is getting the best out of this group. You know, it's not always enough to win, but, you know, I don't feel like you're seeing a team that's going out there and, you know, leaving anything on the field. Like, there's energy, there's effort, even in a season that it's going nowhere. Like, let's be real. Like, this season is over from a playoff perspective. You're playing for your job. You're playing for pride. You're playing to put good tape out there, because these guys, you know, Bobby Aber always says, you know, you want an NFL lifestyle, you have to prove it now, so that next year, when they're talking about who we bring him back and other teams are talking about who we're going to sign in free agency, you got this tape out there. So that's really what this group is playing for now. And I think they're putting out a good product, and because that was a fun game. Like, I don't think anyone went to that game, walked away feeling like, man, I wasted my money. Like, you got your money's worth out of these games.
And let's see, next Monday night, it's supposed to be 28 degrees. In Green Bay.
That's an unseasonably warm day for Wisconsin. Yeah. I saw that the other day, and I was like, man, we lucked out. It's only going to be slightly below freezing. It will feel very, very cold at night, but yeah.
The day before is 23, and on Saturday, the day before that, it's 12. We're getting a break.
If we escape with nothing below 20 degrees, we won that exchange for sure. Like, the Packers are going to be out there in short sleeves. They're going to be like, wow, this is the warmest day we've had in months. Yeah.
I've sat on those sidelines in that temperature of weather, and I'm sure, and I know you have as well.
You got to want to do it.
It's not pretty. I can promise you at all. Jeff Nowak, as always, we truly appreciate your insight. Have a great week, my friend. We'll listen to you guys on Monday evening.
Yep, you as well. Thanks.
Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. We have Mert from up in Rayville, Louisiana. Mert, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
All right. How are you?
Doing well.
Thanks for taking my call.
So
I'm from Rayville, grew up there, went to high school in Monroe, had to drive a little bit for that. But yeah, this is the, you know, the project, the meta project that we've been talking about is just an incredible thing that's happening, you know, for our state, obviously, but really for the whole Delta region, if you would consider Memphis all the way down to Natchez. So it's just going to be a great thing. And there's just a massive buzz. I mean, a massive buzz. It's a flurry of activity. Ravel, when I grew up in Ravel, I live in New Orleans now. I've lived here for 15 years. My three kids were born here. I was at the game on Sunday. I also agree with the 2-point call. I've never been called a Yankee in my life until I moved to New Orleans because I grew up above I-10.
You lived in South Arkansas, right?
Yeah, I would like to say West Mississippi. If we're going to choose, I would say West Mississippi. But so we're about 45 minutes from the Arkansas border and about 45 minutes from the Mississippi River. And it's what you can. It's just a bunch of John Deere tractors, New Holland tractors, and then just row fields as far as you can see. I had a cotton field in front of my house and a bayou in the back where we would, you know, swim in the Cypress Swamp and ride jet skis and stuff like that. So it's just when we started hearing the rumors a couple of months ago, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, what are y'all talking about? And then the rumors just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this actually might happen. And it's going to be transformative to the state, obviously to the region. I mean, we're talking about like a double population increase, because when I was a kid in Ravel, we had, I think, 5,500 was the population. And now I think it's like hovering around 4. So there's been, we talk about Louisiana, this brain drain, right? So these kids, they come up, you get educated, and especially in rural communities, and then they go off to wherever to go to college, and then they don't come back. Well, people are starting to come back, and I just want to give a shout-out to the Richland Chamber of Commerce. And it's some kids that I know that I grew up with that they've decided to come back.
I'm sorry, Mert, we have to get to a hard break. I apologize. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about the insurance challenge, what reconciliation means for the federal budget, what tariffs can the president-elect enact unilaterally, bestsellers this Christmas, this as well, and other topics when we return with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.